Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome back to the Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell, where today we welcome back a returning guest, a private investor who we spoke to back in September, and his name is Andy Ross. So, Andy, it's great to be talking to you again. How have you been? How has the whole COVID situation been for you? Are you surviving still?
I am surviving on a personal note. Yeah, all quite good.
Okay.
Been fortunate enough to be able to look at my kind of first property. So going through that, which is kind of stressful and slow. But yeah, I'm very happy to be doing that. Yeah, got things to keep me busy, particularly looking at kind of new shares and that kind of thing. So
good.
Plenty to do indoors. And then, yeah, the portfolio's done pretty well. Okay. Nothing too exciting. It is kind of, as I mentioned in the first interview, kind of quite boring dividend stocks at the moment, but looking to move more into growth. So I have, yeah, been looking at some AI shares, which I know I'll talk to you about.
Yeah.
And then last year, as kind of companies cut their dividends, I know we discussed a couple of growth shares that I invest in, such as Team 17, which continues to do well after I sold out. And there's others kind of on the watch list as well.
Okay.
I invest in Polar Capital, which is another AIM, slightly larger AIM company. So, yeah, lots of opportunities amongst the kind of mid caps and small caps that I think some of your audience would be pretty interested in. So, lots of things to research. And the portfolio's done all right.
Good. Okay, fantastic. And of course, we are talking a little bit about AI stocks today. But let's, of course, welcome our Scottish compadre, Mr. Kenneth Russell. How are you?
Yes, I'm doing well. Very well indeed. Good to have you back on, Andy. And just when you mentioned boring stocks, there's nothing wrong with boring stocks, because it just reminded me of a stock that I used to invest in, and it was called Volver. And basically, it was probably the most boring company out there. They invested in, they were a turnaround company, so they picked up companies that were down in their knees. They injected a bit of capital, you know, got them profitable and sold them on. Now, the only RNSs they ever really put out was, we've bought this company that's a disaster, and then 6 months later or a year later, they would say, we've sold this company and made a fortune. And it didn't really float my boat, but it was, I think at the time I bought the shares at £1.66, and let's say I sold them for a small profit, it was just maybe £2 or something. Lo and behold, you know, 7 years later, they're at £14 now. And that's all they do. They just a turnaround company. There's no bells and whistles, but you know, the share price has responded. So there's nothing wrong with boring stocks. They still make money. It just doesn't give you that dopamine feed that everybody wants from a 10 bagger overnight. You know, that's been a 10 bagger almost a 10 bagger over 7 years, you know. So nah. There's more than one way to skin a cat, but no, bone stocks are good as long as they make money. So they are.
Yeah, for sure. I think 10 bagger over 7 years, not too bad going, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you've got a long-term view, you know, if you're quite happy to stick 10 grand in and say, you know, I really like the board of directors, they've got skin in the game, which was true about Volver. You know, they're approachable, you can speak to them on the phone. But they weren't like rock stars or anything like that. You know, they just quietly got on with what they were doing. And it's not for everybody, but they know how to make money. I just wish I had it left some money in there. But ultimately, everybody's looking for that dopamine feed from a big win or whatever. So, yeah, the gambler in me made me sell up and move on to pastures new.
Mm.
But, yeah. So, last time we had you on, Andy, obviously it was a lot of dividend and sort of income stocks. Have you still got a large portion of your portfolio in that sector?
Yeah, I do. I mean, yeah, my portfolio is smaller because they're taking money out to put a deposit on the house. So it's kind of changing. It's kind of an interesting transformation. I probably will have less of my investments in future in kind of the dividend stocks. Not least because 2020 just showed actually that's quite a vulnerable way to invest. So yeah, for my strategy, I think I'll invest more in kind of investment trusts to get that kind of dividend cash flow. Mm-hmm. And then play up the level of more speculative investments within my portfolio, the really small caps, kind of future growth stocks for tomorrow, and then also have build some of these kind of larger AIM shares. So I already have Polar Capital, invest in Team 17 before. So these kind of companies that are around the kind of 500 million kind of mark. So not expecting spectacular growth from them, but hopefully they can grow much quicker than the FTSE 100 companies. So a bit of a mixed bag, but definitely want to add more of the kind of speculative investments. So one of the shares that I'm going to talk about today is called Renalytics AI.
Yep.
And it's kind of a pre-revenue company, which is never something I've ever invested in before. I'm not invested in any of the shares I'm going to talk about today relating to AI as yet, but that might change. But it's a pre-revenue company, so it's a very different to anything I've ever invested in before. Maxite is a loss-making company as well. So yeah, there's a lot of different companies out there. But I'm definitely going to move more towards growth now that I kind of had this reset in my portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, AI is a sector. I mean, you see it all the time in the news popping up, and the only kind of AI company that we were kind of aware of was a company called Brandshield, and we actually interviewed the CEO, Mark. Mm. It was his name, his name escapes me anyway, but this was an Israeli company that were targeting sort of fake goods, fake websites, online scams, and again they were embracing AI, big data, whatever you want to call it, and they were a private company at that particular point, and they're now reversing into an AIM shell called Two Shields Investments. I don't actually know what stage that is at because I've not really followed the story for the last 2 or 3 months, but it's interesting as well. I mean, obviously the more technology there is in the world, there's more opportunities for people to scam, and you hear about it all the time. So you do, people losing an absolute fortune. So that was their line of work. But obviously, you're more interested in sort of healthcare AI, which is slightly different. Can you maybe, from your research, can you give us what is AI in healthcare? It kind of floats my boat. It jumped out at me.
Yeah, so there's AI obviously across a number of different industries. So there's kind of Blue Prism, which is robotic process automation, which is highly competitive, quite hard to differentiate. And then there's Indigo Vision, which is kind of security AI, and Attract, which is e-commerce AI. So, I mean, you really look at AI in all different industries. But when it comes to healthcare, I think there's probably a little bit less risk in my point of view, because obviously with AI that's going to replace jobs, there's probably a political or regulatory risk that most people won't want to see that. But when it comes to healthcare, I think AI has massive advantages that no one wants to get in the way of. So, I mean, at the moment, drug discovery, as anyone who invests in a pharma company knows, takes many, many years. And the potential of AI is to really cut this process down by taking huge amounts of data and crunching it much, much quicker. So there's huge potential in getting quicker to drugs that can treat people for all sorts of conditions. So as we just seen with the COVID vaccine, when people put effort into finding a solution to a problem, they quite often do it, manage to do it. So I think once the medical profession really gets behind AI, then we will see a rapid growth in in its usage, and I don't think really anyone will stand in the way of it in the way that they might do in other industries, for example, in legal, or where there's implications for huge job losses through automation. I think these areas will be slower to adopt to AI's potential, or there'll be major roadblocks put in the way. I don't see the same issues within healthcare. The problem with healthcare AI, of course, is just whether enough people trust it, whether doctors really want to use it. So, I mean, I think there's still some way to go, but AI within healthcare is definitely an area that's really interesting. And the UK seems to have some good list of companies within there as well. So I've been looking at Ixico, which is focused on neurological diseases. So obviously there's some quite good structural growth opportunities there. Aging population, sadly means an almost inevitable rise in kind of Alzheimer's disease, et cetera. So their data analysis capabilities are going to be more and more important. And that's an AI company. They're quite interesting.
Yeah, I was actually looking at their presentation earlier on. Ixico, is that how you pronounce it?
Ixico.
Yeah, they've got some interesting facts in there. So the total worldwide cost of dementia, Mark. Have a guess. What do you think the total worldwide cost is?
The total worldwide cost
per year, I'm assuming.
Of dementia?
Yeah. I think it's per year. It doesn't actually say, but just have a guess.
Oh, blimey, have a guess.
Oh, come on, Rick.
All right, okay, 10 million, I don't know.
One trillion.
Okay.
1 trillion, yeah. And obviously there's an aging population, so the number of people in the world with dementia is expected to triple by 2050. And obviously dementia, my mum's actually in late stage Parkinson's, so I'm actually experiencing, well, not that I've seen her for a year, obviously with COVID, but you know, I've experienced it firsthand how hard it is to you know, to not to engage, but just to deal with it from all sorts of levels. It's a huge market. So it is. I can definitely see, as you say, Andy, you know, nobody's going to put barriers in the way of AI in healthcare, because the population's just getting bigger and bigger in the world. People are living longer. People want to live longer. You know, they're finding more cures for diseases. So bodies are living longer in a frame that's probably not, you know, a body that's not designed to live that amount of time. So, yeah, it'll be interesting how to see.
What kind of things do they have going on then at Ixico?
Yeah, so it's an interesting company. So it, looking at it from a financial point of view, firstly, basically their revenue for the year ended 30th of September 2020, revenue was up 26%. To 9.5 million, gross margins of 66.6%, operating profit more than doubled to 900 grand, no debt, order book up 36% to 21.7 million. So that's a lot of numbers. But I think the takeaway there is that this is a company that already has customers, is selling, is going to experience, I think, rapid growth. And the reasons for that is that they're winning pretty substantial contracts. So in December, they won a £3.4 million contract with the existing client, which would run over 4.5 years. The month before, in November, they won a £1.9 million contract for research around Huntington's disease. And then April last year, they got their single largest contract to date, which was £10.5 million. So, I mean, the opportunities, there's definitely a lot of customers there, demands for their kind of algorithm to crunch data within the kind of neurological niche, so kind of within conditions affecting the brain. And as I say, this ties in really to an aging population, so it's supported by those kind of structural changes within our society. So really interesting. They have a quite a clear roadmap to future growth, including kind of collaborations with the big kind of pharma companies. developing kind of more algorithms, investing in their kind of marketing and contract bid capabilities. They want to diversify into new areas within neurology. And they also want to develop kind of a new platform, which they call Assessor, which I don't know a lot about. But they're definitely really keen to invest in growth. And I think the interesting thing as we talk is that the share price is actually down about 25% off its highs.
Okay.
And I'm not exactly clear on why that is, but from what I see from the financials, from the contract wins, from kind of the annual report and how they talk about how they want to grow. To me, it just looks like a great AI share, really focused in on a niche, highly valued by their customers, as the contract wins and the revenue growth shows. So, yeah, from what I've read about it so far, I think it's great, and just I'll do a bit more due diligence, but yeah, I could easily foresee myself adding it to my portfolio.
Yeah, and I guess with these companies as well, if you've got this big data, then there'll be other companies wanting to use that data as well, you know, so that there might be some partnerships and joint ventures along the way, because data is important, you know, the especially big data. So it's different. It's nice to bring different things to the table, because sometimes you get stuck in a rut. I mean, I was pretty much stuck in a mining and natural resources kind of sector. But, you know, obviously doing this podcast has opened my eyes to the fact that there actually is other sectors out there and other sectors that are, you know, just as exciting and profitable. So it's something I would never go and hunt down myself. You know, I wouldn't say I'm going to go and look at AI stocks, because it's just not my mindset. But for certain people that, you know, if you're a tech guy, or maybe you work in the industry, or you're a software programmer, you know, AI is perhaps right up your street. So
What was it that attracted you, Andy, to AI?
I just kind of looked into it. So I have worked in tech PR in the past. So I think there's that aspect to it. Just something about it. I think the increase in kind of computing power, I think this, you know, AI has been around, as has been earlier today, since the time's been around since 1956. So, I mean, this isn't a new technology. And, you know, I think it has been held back by kind of bad PR around it. Kind of all the films show AI, kind of the robots end up killing the humans, there's a lot of mistrust and misunderstanding around it, but within a healthcare context, it has huge positive opportunities to really help people. So I've never invested in AI in the past, but there's something about it, the increase in computing power, I think, means that the next few years could be much better than kind of the past 70 years. I think it's time, it feels like it's coming. I can't point to anything specifically that says this year will be the year, but there's some really great companies, analytics, AI even in particular, just seems like it really could be on the precipice of big growth. So it's quite an interesting sector. I don't think you have to be a techie. I'm not a techie, but you just have to buy into the story that, you know, the increase in computing power, over the last couple of years means that its adoption will go up massively. And I mean, there's analysts, you might find this interesting, there's analysts saying that IDC, saying that AI revenues will pass $300 billion by 2024. So in only 3 years' time, you're looking at industry that's exponentially bigger than it is at the moment. So I think there's a lot going on in the sector.
Definitely. I was just you talked about a film earlier on, and I was trying to think of the film that was specifically AI, and it just jumped into my mind there. So it was iRobot.
With Will Smith.
That was quite a good film, and it was actually made quite a long time ago as well. It's about 15 years old, I think. But you know, that's it. As you say, every film that gets made, AI is always portrayed as they end up becoming the baddie or whatever, and they end up trying to take over the world or whatever. But
that was just a misunderstood robot. That's all he was.
Is that what it was? Yeah. But all right. So, and is it just healthcare AI you've looked at, Andy, or have you know, obviously?
Yeah, it is. They're the companies that stand out. I looked at Blue Prism in a blog that I wrote on the sector as well. So, as I said earlier, it's into kind of robotic process automation, which probably more is that kind of automating back office tasks, relatively low value, and falls into that category of potentially rubbing up against kind of unions and politicians in terms of job losses, and also just lots of people offer robotic process automation. It's not really a niche, I don't think. They have lots of customers, but from what I read, I don't rate Blue Prism as highly as these more niche healthcare ones.
Yeah, and do these companies have institutional investors? I mean, one of them's quite a chunky market cap. The Renalytics, I think that's how you pronounce it. I think it's like 600 million quid. I mean, it's a fair old size. Mm-hmm. So it's another one's about 40, 50 million.
Yeah, Ixco's much smaller. I think it'll be more slow and steady growth. So Renalytic AI, I'm not sure how you say it either, but I'm going with that. It's been boosted a lot in the last year because this year it should be getting FDA approval to be part of Medicare. And they have an agreed price of $950 per test, as I understand it. So they expect that. That's basically why the share price has gone up so much, I think. Like I said earlier, it's pre-revenue at the moment. So a lot of it is baked into, I think, a positive announcement from the FDA, maybe in the coming months, on being able to charge $950 a time for their test. So that's why it's a much higher market cap. Now, obviously, FDA is the Food and Drug Administration in America, so that, I think they're much bigger over there. So obviously, much bigger population. So I think that accounts for the difference. But yeah, the market cap from when I wrote my blog, maybe, I don't know, 2 months ago to now is like £100 million. And not really, I don't think a lot has changed, but I think just more and more people may be becoming aware of the share and of the potential this year to have quite a significant re-rate and start making revenues and profits.
Yeah, and they target is like kidney disease. Is that their main?
Yeah. So yeah, that's right. So they help with chronic kidney disease, which they say affects 37 million Americans, if I remember right. I think it's 800 million people globally. So again, a huge addressable market. I think they'll start in the US. 37 million people sounds like enough to get going on. And they have quite significant partnerships. Mount Sinai is a big investor in the company. They've also signed a deal with the University of Utah, which will roll out the Kidney Intel X platform, which is basically their product, their AI product. And that'll be rolled out in 6 states across the US. They're getting traction stateside.
Yeah, and are they both dual listed? Well, this particular, the Renalytics, or however you pronounce it, are they dual listed?
They are dual listed, so I think they raised $73 million last year. Mm-hmm. I'll just look back at my notes, but yeah, they're definitely dual listed.
Yep, yeah, certainly.
I don't think Ixco is.
All right, okay, we can have a look at that later. Mm. There was something that caught my eye as well, Andy, on your bio, on your Twitter page, and I think we asked this the last time as well. So your aims for the £1 million ISA and financially independent by 40 years old, are we still on track for that, or are we?
That was before asking for highs. I think so. I'll get some good, obviously, growth stocks into my portfolio. That's definitely still the aim. Might have revised it down a little bit, because my Twitter bio might have been 2 million when I spoke to you in September. I think, I'm pretty happy in the 1 million. I mean, that's fine. I've been a bit greedy and a bit ambitious. But no, I think all good. I think, yeah.
You've got to be on track. Sometimes you've got to shoot for the moon and then accept the ceiling. You know, it's
I think that's exactly right.
You've got to have that that ultimate dream or target, and then, you know, it's if you get there, great. If you've got a secondary target that's a bit lower and you get there, you know, that's even better. So and you had this website as well last time, obviously, incomeinvestorweb.co.uk. That's your blog site, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, it is. I've become a bit less tight-fisted, maybe since I lowered my target on financial independence, and I've upgraded from the WordPress free site. So yeah, that is now the new URL, and hopefully the site's a bit better and more useful for people. But I'd be very grateful if private investors check it out. And that's where I first published my thoughts on Blue Prism, IXCO, and Renalytix AI as well.
Yeah, and that's just an outlet for you just to, you know, put your research out there. Is there anything else behind it?
So I've done a couple of interviews recently, just started doing interviews with kind of written interviews with kind of some other private investors. So yeah, hopefully that's useful. And I'm kind of starting to produce some beginner guides as well. So anyone that's new to investing, hopefully it can help them as well. But mostly it records a little bit of my own kind of investing journey, what I've bought and sold. Tends to do a monthly update unless it's a particularly quiet month. And then, other or kind of random thoughts on different shares. So, obviously there's an AI one. Look at some dividend stocks. Cover quite a wide range of bases on there. Cover some of the kind of AIM shares as well. So, but it's my own writing.
So this is the UK incomeinvestor.co.uk.
Incomeinvestorweb.co.uk.
Oh, incomeinvestorweb.co.uk. Okay.
Someone else, I think, at Income Investor.
Yeah, I saw someone else. Incomeinvestorweb. Okay, I've got you now. So you mentioned another AI stock just earlier. Was it Blue something? Was it? I can't remember now.
Blue Prism.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what were they? Did you look into them very much or not?
I did in the article. I didn't for this.
Okay.
For our talk, just but if people want to read the article as it is online, then they can. But like I said earlier, I don't think it's quite as investable from my personal point of view, just because it's not got the same niche. Robotic process automation is very, very different kind of AI. If people have an FT subscription, then there's an article that's quite critical after their kind of latest results. The latest results came out whenever it was, and the share price tanked. It tends to be that way, and then it recovers, and then results come out and it tanks. There's a bit of a trading opportunity in the shares, but if you're looking at a long-term AI investment, a kind of you don't need to worry about the upcoming results affecting the share price. It doesn't seem to be that kind of share. It's definitely a sell ahead of the news kind of share.
Right. Yeah. Okay. No, I found your article online. Yeah, that's would be quite a good read there. So looks like Blue Prism is a robotics processing, automation software that provides digital workforce.
It does have a lot of customers. I think it's a proper company.
Yeah.
But whether it makes a good investment, I think it remains to be seen. But it doesn't seem to have the same opportunities this year, I don't think, to rapidly go up. Renalytix AI almost certainly has the biggest potential to rocket, despite its recent share price rise. Okay. Nixco has been slow and steady, but seems like a really decent company. No debt, quick revenue growth, all the kind of things that you might want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Go on, Kenny.
Yep. You know, no, I was just thinking in the background there, obviously, we've got all these computers on massive farms in the computer, the world, mining for Bitcoin and various other coins and tokens. You just think about the amount of processing power it's doing that. It would just imagine even for 1 hour a day that they switched off and focused on some solving some world problems, it might make the world a better place. I mean, it's mind-blowing when you look at some of these, you know, something like Argo blockchain. I think, was it the last RNS, they had 4,500 new computers in the farm, you know, just specifically to mine for crypto.
Right.
It's just mind-blowing.
But, yeah, you can achieve a heck of a lot. I don't know if you're aware of the there's certain things you can have on your phone where your phone's processing power can be used while you sleep to run different kind of trials or tests for the medical industry.
They sort of borrow your processing power.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're right. If you harnessed all the stuff that's going to use Bitcoin, the mining for cryptocurrencies, yeah, you could.
Yeah, eventually they'll run out of mining, but. Not for a while yet. When does Bitcoin stop? Is it 2250 or something? I might be talking through a hole in my arse for want of a better term. It's before that eventually. You guys keep
You'll
talking.
You'll have to Google it.
I'm Googling it. Yeah.
Well, all I was going to say, Andy, I find it quite intriguing that you've kind of switched from safe dividend stocks to growth stocks, and even more intriguing that you went to AI. I mean, what was this? Maybe you give us a bit of a reasoning of, first of all, why you switched away from the safer things. You maybe just want to go for growth, and yeah, what kind of took you to AI?
So, I haven't invested in AI yet. So these are just shares that I've looked at and that I kind of rate, but actually I don't have a vested interest in how they do at the moment. I don't own any AI shares, so it's a bit of a mixed bag. So obviously my portfolio is lower because I took a whole bundle of money out for deposit from a high, so it seemed like a chance to kind of reset on strategy. And then last year, obviously loads of companies kind of took away their dividends and then have subsequently reintroduced them, but at a lower rate. So dividend investing doesn't seem to make quite as much sense. And I didn't realize quite how vulnerable perhaps dividends were.
Okay.
So last year when I was talking to you, I started investing in some of these AIM companies. So Team 17, et cetera. And they did incredibly well. I mean, that one particularly because it's in gaming. So, I mean, it has, just the whole industry was going up, but it did particularly well. And I still think it's a great company, but I sold out for kind of 50% profit or whatever it was. So that seems quite good over a short period of time for a company that's now worth £1 billion. So it'll find it harder to grow at that same rate. Mm. So now my portfolio definitely going to be more of a mixed bag. So I think investment trusts will do a lot of the legwork in terms of trying to produce cash within the portfolio that I can then invest into slightly more speculative stocks, and then some of these slightly bigger AIM shares as well. And I'll definitely keep some of the kind of mid caps and larger shares. So I still have Legal in general. I sold some of my Persimmon today as they're up like 5%, but still have companies like Persimmon, these kind of FTSE 100s, very high margin, very, very big companies. But yeah, it's going to be more of a mixed bag. I mean, it's 6 months' time. I think my portfolio will probably look very different. It'll start to have some of these smaller cap companies. And I think that's quite exciting. I think that, but I think 2020 just showed the vulnerability of dividends and a focus on income.
Yeah. It's
dangerous.
Yeah, it sounds like your portfolio is very well managed and you keep on top of it. Mine's just absolute chaos. So as Andy, I'm doing placings and jumping from different broker accounts and moving money from bank, it's just chaos. I actually forget sometimes what shares I have. I mean, I've got a nice position in Coincilium, and I actually forgot that I had 250,000 shares and one of our broker accounts. You know, and you think, how can you forget that? But it just happens. And
just busy, huh? Can't keep an eye on the profile all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I really should get like a spreadsheet or something, but because I don't really trade that much, to be honest. I don't know.
Mm.
Like I say, even the warrant situation as well is messy. I mean, I've got a box with, and I'm probably not the only person in this position, so I've got a box with warrants in it, and I know for a fact that I've got some missing. So I really need to get a warrant spreadsheet set up with all the, you know, the expiry dates, what the execution price is, you know, how many warrants it is, you know, emails for the company, because there's nothing worse than if you're trying to excise warrants and you're like, I don't have a clue, you know, who to contact with this. And it should tell you on the, you know, the documentation, but it's not always black and white. So yeah, I could do it with a weekend, one to catch up in my books, because my books are probably due in another 2 or 3 months, and I was up to date, but I'm probably about 6 months behind again. And I could probably do with having a bit of a tracker for my portfolio, but these things always get pushed to the back. So how do you manage yours then, Andy? Because you sound as if you're well on top of it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's different, isn't it? Different game coming from FTSE 100 shares, where you don't really have that. So, it's a relatively small portfolio. Trying to think now how many shares I have. It would be around about the 20 mark. I've been adding a little bit to my SIP, different investment trusts that I mentioned to kind of produce the income while I kind of research more growth shares. But I don't look at it every day, try not to look at it all the time. But they're just in there in the ISA, doing their thing. They're not the most kind of agile companies, right? They're just quite big companies. They're just Don't have much drama or much need for too much admin.
It'd be good if you could have, like, I mean, you get a crypto wallet. It'd be good if you could have like a share wallet where you just hook it up to all your broker accounts, and it just, I mean, there might be an app out there, and somebody's going to tweet me once this podcast goes out. You know, if you're on your broker account and you can mate it to an app or a wallet, and it just updates automatically for you, that would be great.
That would be quite good. I know we're going to check, but I think there's a way in Google Drive or Google Sheets, isn't there, I think, to pull in live stock prices.
You
can do it that way. I don't do that, but I don't think it requires that much tech usage.
No, I used to do that. I used to do that when I had a larger portfolio. Yeah, it's very simple. Yeah, Google Sheets, which is basically Excel, but Google's version. Yeah, you just make a spreadsheet and you type in a little formula, but it's very simple.
I don't want to type in, Mark. I don't want to do anything. I want it to do it for me.
No, you type it once. And then
As soon as I hit buy, I want it to be uploaded to my app and my spreadsheet. I don't want to do it at all. Joking aside, also the final Bitcoin, just to put that into bed as well, is 21.40. So I was 110 years out. I knew it was at least 100
21.40.
So I think we'll be long gone by then, Mark. So we don't need to worry about that. But
no.
Yeah, just to finish off, obviously blockchain and AI, there could be a marriage made in heaven there, Andy. What do you think?
By my pay grade to comment on that, I would honestly say I don't know a lot about blockchain. Possibly there could be some clever tech. I guess that's the exciting thing about tech, because someone just needs to, like you say, be smart and join together different things that are already out there in a better way than other people who joined it together, and there's a big business. But I don't know the implications for AI within blockchain, but yeah. I'm sure someone else does, and maybe there is a big business there for tomorrow. But I don't know what those implications are.
It just seems that tech is just since COVID. I mean, it was the same when the last sort of Black Swan event, which was obviously the crash in sort of 2009, 2010, whatever you want to call it. That was the sort of last Black Swan event, and there was a lot of big tech companies born out of that. And it just seems now that obviously we've had COVID worldwide, another Black Swan event, and it looks like technology is just taking another massive leap ahead. It's quite bizarre how, you know, new tech and new entrepreneurs, I can't even speak right tonight, these guys appear out of these events and, you know, just push on with new ideas. It's quite scary. I mean, I don't know, obviously you're younger than me, Andy, and Mark, you're a lot younger as well. In fact, you're both under 40. I mean, I was born in the 70s, 1972, so, you know, I can remember before computers, you know, before the internet, you know, before remote controls for television. You know, it's just, I'm getting old. I'm only 49, but it's quite scary that you can actually see how much the world is involved in, you know, I'm not going to say half my life, but, you know, in half a century. It's just scary how much it's involved in the last 50 years. It's great as well. You know, it's great to have lived through that, you know, because there's probably people that have lived in past centuries and nothing's changed for 100 years. You know, nothing really has changed, but just everything is changing so fast. And there was a statement, maybe just to finish off, because I know I'm talking now. There was a statement somebody made in the podcast, and it said, the kids that are born today will never step foot in a bank. And that kind of,
really,
I've sat and thought about that umpteen times, and I went, you know what? I hardly step foot in a bank now.
Yeah.
So how long will it be before physical banks are gone? I mean, they're going all the time. You know, they're disappearing, you know, all these rural banks, and they're getting replaced with a bank that, you know, appears in the back of a big sort of bus type thing, and people go and do their bank, and then it goes to another village on the Wednesday and another village on the Thursday or whatever. But all these physical branches are 15, 20 years, I think, will be gone. And that's why that statement really, I said, that's a ridiculous statement. And then I thought about it and I went, no, actually, that guy's 100% right. Because all these kids will be using crypto to pay for everything.
Yeah.
And they'll have it all in their phone. Yeah. They'll be doing everything in their phone. There'll be no physical banks. Everything will be done in the blockchain.
Yeah.
That's the way the world's going. And it's quite scary. But on the other hand, you just need to embrace it and go on with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's like another statistic about children won't drive like we drive. They'll never drive a car like we drive, like we've learnt to drive them, because of they're going to be fully automated.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's super cool, I think, as well. It's nothing to be scared of.
Yeah, as long as they don't do away with beer. You know, there's got to be beer about forevermore, you know. And that would really concern me. So it would. But okay. Anyway, Andy, well, it's great having you on, Andy. I think that's about 45 minutes of chatting. So any final comments, Mark?
No, not at all. No, thank you, Andy, for that. Your research is incredible for a private investor. You do yourself justice there with your investments, I think. And your website is somewhere, I should say, that other people should go and check out for some quality research. But thank you very much for introducing us to AI in the stock market.
Yeah,
no
worries.
Thanks very much. I just read a little parting quote that sang from Jeff Bezos earlier today, and he's actually, well, I read it earlier today, it's from a few years ago, and he said, we're basically in a golden age of AI. And to quote him, he said, we are now solving problems with machine learning and artificial intelligence that were in the realms of science fiction for the last several decades. So it's hard to argue with him. I really do think the next few years will be quite exceptional, and hopefully that feeds through into the share price of AI companies as well.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for him investing. I mean, that's the thing, just to finish off. I mean, you see, you know, Elon Musk does a tweet about Bitcoin or Dogecoin, and they got 4 and 5%. It's quite scary how one individual now can start to
take off. Yeah,
you know, it's quite worrying as well. But it's the way of the world, you know. You just need to accept it and you're not going to change it. You're not going to make any difference. So you just go on with it sometimes. But there we go. But we'll have you back on, Andy, and we can maybe look at these companies next time, see how they're getting on. We'll try and do it once a quarter, I think, if you're up for it, because that was September last time you were on, so we're in March now, so we'll maybe get you back on early summer or something. You can maybe give us an update on these companies and anything else that catches your eye.
Sure, it seems like they're getting new contracts and new news, yeah, on monthly, so they might be able to catch up on these and maybe research a new thing by then as well. So, yeah, that'd be really great.
All right, perfect. Right, appreciate your time, Andy.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time. Bye.